This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hi, my name is Kristen Chow, and welcome to Radioactive Radio. We're talking to members of the Kansas City Mixed Roots group today. And in the studio, we have three members. To my left is Diane Burkholder. Next to her is Paku Her. And Jalen Anderson. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Diane Burkholder, one of the members of the planning committee of the Kansas City Mixed Roots, and I've lived here in the area for 3 years.
My name is Paku Her, and I am a Kansas Cityan. I'm Asian Pacific Islander. I spend my days doing political and social campaigning with a group called 18 Million Rising, and I am the mother of two mixed-race children. My spouse is white.
I'm Jalen Anderson. I'm also on the planning committee for the Kansas City Mixed Roots, and I've lived in Kansas City for most of my life, all 22 years of it. So
the Kansas City Mixed Roots group has as their mission to provide opportunities for education, support, and socialization for multiracial individuals, families, and people in interracial relationships. So just give us some basics on what Mixed Roots does.
Mixed Roots is a group comprised of single adults, people that are in interracial relationships, people that are multiracial themselves, really a multitude of different types of people here in the Kansas City area. We strive in order to help people to be able to create some spaces for people to have conversations regarding their own lives, regarding interactions with other people in the community, and also thinking about their own families. So we really are trying to incorporate as many people that feel comfortable in the group, just really trying to get the word out that we are kind of new and re-emerging. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but just trying to let people know that we are here and we are a space for people.
How long has it been around?
The group was originally founded in 1991 by three women here in the community, three African-American women and one white woman. White women, Sarah Starn, Sherry Payne, Kathleen MacArthur, and Tina Worth. And they were all had multiracial babies and wanted a space for their children to really be able to come together and see other children that looked like them. And the group was going strong from 1991 all the way really until about a year and a half ago. Had regular meetings, had a lot of discussions, did some organizing as far as getting people really advocating for people to be able to identify themselves as far as not being forced to check that one box. And about a year and a half ago, the group was kind of figuring out what to do and had a couple meetings about a year and a half ago to figure out, well, what's the group going to be and what is it looking like for our community today? And so since then, it was named back then the Multiracial Family Circle. We've renamed ourselves as the Kansas City Mixed Roots and are really, have been doing regular events since June of this year.
So I want to sort of get into why a group like this is necessary, but before I do that, I want to read some statistics regarding multiracial individuals. Among American children, the multiracial population has increased almost 50% to 4.2 million since 2000, making it the fastest growing youth group in the country. Across the country, 9 million people, or about 2.9% of the population, chose more than one race on the last census, a change of about 32% since 2000. And as we know, 2000 was the first year that people were even allowed to check more than one box on the census. So as we can see, the numbers of multiracial persons in this country is increasing, at least according to these statistics. Why is a safe space for multiracial individuals necessary?
I've noticed since being a young man and being 22 years old and that being of a multiracial background that it's needed to be able to have more discussions with people who deal with the same stresses of life. Kansas City has grown so very much in these past few years, and especially in Jackson County and also in Kansas City, Kansas. And I think the group is something that can have, you know, people can go into express themselves without saying, well, why do you still worry about such things? So many people think, well, why do you still hold on to such things? And why do you believe that racism and the stresses that folks have every day who come from all backgrounds, if it's Asian descent, African American descent, Middle Eastern descent, so many different things that are dealing with in today's society, and families are becoming more, different backgrounds and growing together. And I think the children, when they get to our age, 20s and 30s, that they're going to have a stressful time identifying themselves. And the group from the 90s, many of their children who have grown up are now becoming of that age. And I think this generation from 2012 to now, we're dealing with Twitter, we're dealing with Facebook, all these different kind of interactions and things. And I think a group that, you know, lays a platform that can relate to them, show them that there's a safe place, show them that if you want to be more involved in a community and show your side of issues and your side of the stresses of every day. So I think that's one thing that Mixed Roots can deal with very well.
So color blindness is not the answer, right?
No, not at all.
What? No, not the answer. I think, too, the statistics that you just read, Kristen, would be very easy to interpret the statistics and say, oh, well, there are more mixed-race people, therefore race is becoming less of an issue. When, in my experience, I actually think that part of what's happening, right, is that there may be greater acceptance of interracial relationships that birth children, and yet what's systemic about racism hasn't gone away. And that as we increase, and this I'm speaking from my experience thinking about my own mixed-race children, as we think about what it means to increase the number of mixed-race people, my experience shows us that that actually exacerbates the challenges around race. That it's not that multiraciality complicates race, it's that race is complicated as it is. And to have folks who are saying this false binary or what feels untenably dualistic about race, that you're either white or you're not white, is incredibly problematic as a construct. And it's problematic for everybody. It's just illuminated in a particular way when somebody who says, I'm multiracial and I don't fit these boxes, steps into a room and indicates that that's their reality and that's the challenge. The truth is, I think historically, that in many ways in this country, if we think about structurally, this is not about an individual person's identification around race or ethnicity or identification, but that in this country we still very much function structurally as a nation built around race, where you are either white or you are non-white, and there are any number of ways to be non-white, including being multiracial.
Right, and so I think, from what I understand, the group is trying to be more inclusive in that aspect as well, that in the beginning, or years ago when it was founded, it was largely black and white, and as we all know, that this binary that most of our society and the world functions on is not reflective of the reality of people's lives. Like, for instance, you said that your daughters are white and Asian,
mm-hmm.
and you said even being white and Asian, they move about the world very differently than someone who's white and black or white and some other ethnicity.
Absolutely. And when you talk about how they move about in the world, it's not just how they decide they will choose to move around in the world as young mixed-race girls who are Asian and white, but how the world perceives their movements. So I know, as a mom, that part of their Asianness and their whiteness is actually, it gives them relative privilege. If they were Asian and black children, if they were black and Latino, if they were otherwise mixed children, their points of access in a structure and construct would be very different. And I think it would be false to assume that in the same way that it would be false to assume that all people of color have access or lack of access in the same way that multiraciality functions across the board evenly. And that part of what I know has happened that I see, not just for Asians and mixed-race Asian people or people who are mixed-race Asian and white, is that it's very easy to become a lever to maintain anti-blackness and to maintain an anti-black construct and structure for how we do race, at least phenotypically, but also culturally.
Does the group, has the group addressed that? Because we were talking in the green room mm-hmm. how in Obama's memoir, President Obama's memoir, he said that he does not identify as multiracial, even though his father is black, his mother is white, he was raised by a white family. But he spoke about that, how he identifies as black because oftentimes the identification of being multiracial is a tool used to distance oneself from black people.
Mm-hmm. I think we're beginning to have that conversation. I can't obviously speak from before my involvement in the last year and a half ago, but one of the ways which we're trying to make this group really expand and really have these really nuanced and tough conversations. So we have changed. We had a Facebook page, and we have gone to a Facebook group to really allow some more interactive conversations. And some of those topics have come up in those discussions. And I think one of the ways we're looking at broadening that conversation is we want everyone to be able to feel comfortable to interact in an online space. But obviously, not everyone has Facebook. Not everyone is comfortable operating online. At the end of the day, we talk to people on a one-on-one basis. And so we're really looking at ways to have those conversations both online and offline, and those are things that the group has discussed doing. And so we're looking at a multitude of ways to do that, and not only to have those conversations offline, but, you know, what do those conversations look like for mixed-race children? What do those conversations look like for monoracial individuals? What do those conversations look like for interracial couples that are thinking about having children in this society? So we're looking at how many different people are able to interact with the group, that it's just not for this or for that, but it's for many different people, and many different people can fit in the conversation.
So getting back to why a space like this is necessary, how do you want to share some personal experiences about how it is different moving about the world as a multiracial person or being part of a multiracial family?
With the experiences of growing up more in the suburban areas of Kansas City, you don't necessarily run into other children or other teenagers like myself. And that can be, I believe, stressful to some children, not understanding, am I the different one, and am I the sore thumb, if you will. Many times, it's kind of makes you feel different or alienated, really, because when someone asks you, you know, of lack of better words, what are you? Mm-hmm. Which is something that, you know, not a lot of people would necessarily think that would offend many. Mm-hmm. But when you're asked that, it kind of dehumanizes you, and you feel less equal to them. And I have noticed, and not, you know, necessarily growing up with many African-American or multiracial folks in my area, it is very helpful to see successful people who have come from these circumstances that I have and say nothing like this should hold you back. It is only in your mind that holds you back. No one else should make you feel like you should be held back. And you know, the idea of growing up with a Caucasian mother and living with a Caucasian family is that, in my case, they respected both sides, and they understood that for you to truly have peace with oneself, you must understand both sides. And they've let me explore it, and they've let me understand, you know, that being multiracial is not something that you should be afraid of. I think that's one thing that many people and young children deal with. And I think this group is trying to, and hopefully will, along with Diane's help and Paku's help and everyone's help here at this table, that we can start to tell people it's okay. It's nothing that you should feel ashamed of, because I think that's what so many people deal with today. Mm-hmm. So,
your experience and issue?
I think for me, it's you know, like many things, the personal is political. I'm biracial, white and black, and I was raised from the ages of 3 to 9. My mother's Caucasian. I was raised by my mother. Raised in South Dakota, where she is from, which has, I believe right now, about 0.9%, not even 1% black population. And so being a black child in a white world, you know, I noticed very quickly that I was not the same. But I do appreciate my mother for having those conversations early on. And living in South Dakota, you know, although there weren't a lot of black kids, there were a lot of indigenous kids that I grew up with, which I always felt affinity to because we were different and than the main population. And so I left at the age of 12, and I think my mom probably left at the age of 12, had me leave at the age of 12, just for the fact that it's really hard raising a brown child in a monoracial society when there aren't other people that look like them. So then I moved to California, which actually was the opposite, and I started living. Our first place that we lived was out in the desert on a military base. It was very multiracial, and I had friends of all different ethnicities. And through that time, from then to the age until 3 years ago, I lived in California, and being mixed race was something that wasn't so uncommon. There were people of many shades and varieties. And I'd say I think about a lot of my friends were multiracial. One of the things that struck me, though, when I was in college and teaching a mixed-race class, one is that those discussions didn't happen in the classroom, that there finally was a mixed-race class. And in that mixed-race class, people that were either interracially adopted or mixed-race themselves, their families, I would think and hope that they talked about race, and those families didn't even talk about race. And to hear that happen from mixed-race folks, and I think the discussion always is, love's going to be enough. Love isn't always enough, and we need to learn to how to have conversations about race and racism, no matter what our race and our ethnic background is. So it was really enlightening to me that the people didn't really have those spaces to have those mixed race conversations. So when I moved here to Kansas City, a few people I got to know, Ashley Williamson and Jasmine Moore, got to know them. They're both biracial women, and talked about their experience about being mixed race here in Kansas City, and they're like, you know, it wasn't that bad. I had many kids that I grew up with that were multiracial, and then they told me about the group. And I was like, that's amazing that was happening here in Kansas City in 1991. And that need was then, but I think very much that need is still around.
Yeah. And I think for me as a parent, I do not identify as multiracial, right? I, like in the construct, what people call monoracial. But I think this group is really, really important for parents and people who have young multiracial children in their lives. And quite honestly, I think for any children, monoracial, multiracial, white, kids of color. Because the truth is, I think we often lack the ability to teach our young people the basic foundational skills for identity development, ethnic development, cultural development, and racial development. And that there are very few spaces and places where you can do that. There's tons of spaces in academia, but who lives in academia? Like, I don't. And I'm not to shame anybody who does, but I don't. And I think every opportunity with my children is an opportunity to test experience and to test, right? I spent many years doing anti-racism work, and I'm like, it really is. I hate to make it sound so crude, but it's like it's a test in critical race theory and like living it and figuring out what it looks like, and knowing that as an Asian American mom, I will never understand what it means to be a mixed race person. What I do understand is the race construct, and what I do understand is childhood, early childhood identity development. If I can put those pieces together, it's great. If I can put those pieces together with other members of my community who are trying to do the same thing for themselves and for young people in their lives, it's even better, and we can become a community, a living community of learning and practice, where we're trying to figure out how to be in the world as it is and how to be in the world as we want to be in the world.
Right, and speaking of conversations with children, I guess it was about a week or so ago, 18 Million Rising published a conversation that you had with your daughters about race, and I just found it so refreshing that you are able to speak so openly, because even for people who like myself, who were essentially raised by two black parents, those aren't even conversations we had, and whatever conversations we had were just sort of, they weren't as direct and maybe honest as the one that you had with your daughters.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, my partner and I, who I mentioned earlier, is a white man. We have made very distinct, conscientious choices, deliberate choices about how we will raise our children, that in our home, they know, especially now developmentally, they're 4 and 6, they're beginning to understand the complexities of race. So we're talking to them about what it means to be mixed race, to be white and Asian, to be ethnically Hmong, on top of everything else, to be girls, to, you know, all of the other socializing forces that exist in the world that we need to teach them about. And I will say that for us, it's a conversation that reads easily. Like, if you were to read the blog at 18 Million Rising, it reads easily, but it's taken, that's my daughter who's 6, it's taken 6 years of giving her every single building block that we could give her at every developmental stage, from books with people who look different, to not being afraid when she says, why does that person have black skin, right? Because as a parent, you don't want people to be offended. People think it's racist to identify or notice race or to talk about race. It, for the record, it's not racist to talk about race. But that those were opportunities for us to give her the pieces at age 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so that last week when we were in the car, we could have a very complicated conversation about race. But it meant that we had to be willing to try, and it meant that we knew we were going to fail. It meant that lots of people were going to critique us for how we were doing it, and it also meant that we weren't going to know all the time how it was supposed to go, but that we had to be willing to try, because we decided not to raise children who weren't going to know how to be in the world, or at least how to analyze the world they live in.
Right. And so you mentioned that the group seeks to have those conversations and to encourage those conversations among, you know, the families that are involved. And I'm part of the Facebook group, and I've seen some of the conversations, and they're difficult. But like you said, the point is to try, because it's not helpful to anybody to ignore race when it's so pervasive in this society. So yeah.
So yeah, piece of cake, people. So easy.
And so we sort of touched on this earlier. I think there's a fallacy that the more mixing, quote unquote, mixing that goes on, the less racism there will be in society. Do you think that's actually true, or is that a way to combat racism?
I've never thought it would be true. I'm just going to say that. There's still going, sadly, in our minds, there will always be this thought of, I am better than them because they have this aspect. And I almost think that it's a new kind of outlook, because now, you know, you might share something with someone, but they'll have one attachment that you might not, and that's what I've heard people say. Well, they have this attachment that, you know, that they're not as quote unquote pure in some aspects. And I think that's going to create strife even between, you know, in the African American society, the Asian society, the Latino societies. All those societies are going to have this kind of rush of, what are we going to accept and what are we going to still have a problem with other ethnicities and different things. And it's, I don't know why people would actually say that the more, I guess, mixing, for I guess a better word, would damper the acts of racism in our world. So I don't know really why someone would say that. But anyway.
Well, I think people say that term as, you know, use that phrase as a way of being able to say, well, if we just all blend together and we end up looking all alike, right? And that's kind of been the discussion. By your 2050, we're all going to look alike. And like Jalen speaking, it doesn't actually get to the root of the matter. And more so, very often, just folks that are in interracial relationships doesn't mean that we don't have to deal with our own stuff. And if we don't deal with our own stuff, then our children aren't able to deal with their stuff. And then you have mixed race folks that are like caught in this world of, well, you're not this enough and you're not that enough, and always being told that it's not quite good enough, and then the myths that come along with it, like the best of both worlds, and kind of glossing over really the realities and the complexities of what it is to be mixed race, which are very surface conversations, like we have so often, we don't dig deep. I think it, you know, obviously having a more multiracial, multi-ethnic community in society can be helpful. However, it is not the tool, right? We can still, we still have to interact with each other. We have to look at the systemic ways in which racism plays out. And just by purely mixing ourselves together is not going to solve anything.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I think the what's problematic about the question is that is its simplicity, right? That that it's not that if we have more light brown people, then racism has gotten better. That it's, yes, it is an indicator of cultural shifts. No, it is not an indicator of systemic change, right? It's exactly what Diane just said, and that I think it's also indicative of our incapacity as a nation to talk about race in real ways. So we want to identify as only better or worse, when I would posit that it's actually that racism has just changed. Mm-hmm. And the way that we see racism, the expressions, how we visualize racism, how we understand racism, that if we were to talk about something like police brutality and racial profiling, you don't have to be dark black to be profiled. You can be light brown to be profiled. And that light brownness could mean that you're multiracial.
All right, so we're winding down here, but just a couple more questions about the group itself. What are some of the things that you found challenging so far with the group?
At the very first meeting, it was a little bit stressful, but the group is now, you know, it changed so very much. It went from, like you'd said earlier, Kristen, of mainly Caucasian and African-American parents who are trying to raise their multiracial child. And now, I think in this age that we're coming about, there are so many different cultures and communities and backgrounds that are coming together, and people are having to deal with these things, and they're having to deal with, you know, what I might say to this person might be different. So anyway, I think it's the group is helping in that way to start those conversations.
That's good. I know you guys have had some events. Are any upcoming events that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, on October 11th, which is when the local 18th and Vine Jazz and Blues Festival is going on. We've been trying to do a lot of support community events, and we're going to be attending that. Be able to get a lot of families out there just to be able to enjoy the day. And there's also going to be a discussion at the Blue Valley Library on October 23rd, which is a Tuesday, from 3 to 7. And the discussion is called, the All Colors We Are.
Okay. We're going to get cut off. Okay. How can people...
People can find us through our Gmail, kcmixedroots@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook group, Kansas City Mixed Roots.
All right. Thank you all for being here today.
Well, thank you so much.
You have been listening to Radio Active Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, and station's apologies to Kristen and the guests for a little bit of pounding in the ceiling going on. Apparently they are working on the air conditioner on the roof, and nothing could be done about it. And I also apologize to the listeners for that. Radioactive Magazine is a forum provided by KKFI for local activist groups. If you or your activist groups does want to contribute to Radioactive Magazine, whether that be an editorial, whether it be a series of interviews, or whether it be commentary, please contact Dan Connolly at area code 816-217-5875. Stay tuned, we're coming up on Counterspin at 6:30, but first we'll have these messages.